Wednesday, June 14th, 2023. You are listening to the Daily Dose Sports Podcast, and I am your host, Clint Daly, coming to you from the Mile High City here in Denver, Colorado, and we are back for another week of talking sports with a dose of common sense. Hey, happy Wednesday to you. Hope your week is going well. You are now halfway to yet another weekend, and I hope that wherever you are, you and your family and your friends are all staying strong and you are all staying healthy. And you know, this week on the Daily Dose, we've got a little bit of business we need to attend to. Got a few things that I've got to kind of make sure get done. And so we are flashing back to some Daily Dose top fives from some past episodes. And I'll tell you right now, we're talking a lot about NBA history. We actually count down the top five most underrated NBA team of all time. We look back and count down some of the prettiest long-range shooters. If you want guys that look like textbook basketball shooters, we discuss that. We also had a Powerball jackpot that was reaching an insane amount of money a few years back, and we counted down the top five things that you actually have better odds of happening to you than winning that Powerball. And we count down our five favorite NBA backcourts, the top five NBA conference finals upsets. We have a number of things to get today. We'll actually finish up by counting down the top five most impactful NBA free agent signings in history. So sit back, relax, and enjoy a throwback episode of the Daily Dose. I told you we were going to have a little bit of an underrated theme going today. And I want to talk about some underrated players. Some players that, and I'm not saying that these players aren't considered great. Many of them, if you talked about them, you'd say, oh yeah, yeah, he's a great player. But these guys, it seems like they're not ever put up into the greatest echelon. No one counts them as the greatest. And so for our next top five, I want to count down my Daily Dose top five most underrated NBA team. I'm just going to give you five players. They're going to make up my personal NBA team. And I'll take this team. I'll be honest. I'll take this team into battle with just about anybody. They might not be the greatest, but they're going to be pretty tough. They're going to be pretty good. And if we sit here and we said, you know, who's the greatest at this position, you would probably not come up with these guys. These are not those guys. Maybe one. Okay. First off, let me give you my point guard. So at my number five spot, I'm going to start with my point guard. This point guard in my Daily Dose top five most underrated NBA players. This guy, amazing player. He fought a lot of injuries. But you might not realize this. He is one of only three players to average 20 points and 10 assists for three consecutive seasons. The only other two guys that did that, Isaiah Thomas, Oscar Robertson. 20 points and 10 assists for three straight seasons? Nobody does that. He is one of only three to average 20 points and 12 assists for one season. Only other two guys to do it? Isaiah Thomas, Magic Johnson. He led this team. He led a team with a history of being dogs, I guess would probably be the best way to put it. Led them to back-to-back conference finals. Led them to the finals. This is a franchise that they don't go to the finals. They may get to the playoffs. They certainly don't go to the finals of anything. Led them to back-to-back conference finals from 89 to 90 and led them to the finals in 93. Averaged 20 points and 10 assists in the playoffs. My most underrated point guard of my team, it's got to be the Phoenix Suns, Kevin Johnson. And if you want to go on YouTube, go to YouTube and search Kevin Johnson dunk on Hakeem Olajuwon or Kevin Johnson dunk on Mark Eaton. Mark Eaton was what, 7'6"? 7'5"? Go look at that. Hey, the numbers that Kevin Johnson put up were absolutely no joke. And I realize he did it for a short amount of time. He did have those injuries. His body broke down on him. I think he's like the mayor of Sacramento now. Kevin Johnson was an underrated point guard. Will never get discussed in some of the top point guards. he did some pretty amazing things when he was on the floor. Let's move over to my shooting guard, my number four spot on my most underrated NBA players. Here's a guy who played for 14 seasons, averaged 16 points a game, averaged 4.5 assists for his career. He won two championships. And, you know, in those playoff runs, somehow he jumped up his average up to 18 points a game. You say, 18 points, big deal. Look at what LeBron's doing. Look at what some of these other guys are doing. Big deal. Well, you know, when he went to the finals, this guy jumped his average up to 27 points a game in 89 when he and his team swept the Los Angeles Lakers. He shot 48% for his career. Not for a big man. Not for a big man inside dunking. Shooting guard. Shot 48% for his career. Just steady. Just solid. Just constant. Every night you knew what you were going to get. Toughness. Defense. I want this guy on my team. And by the way, Michael Jordan says he's the best defender he ever faced. Give me my shooting guard for my most underrated team, the Detroit Pistons, Joe Dumars. Joe Dumars was pretty good. And when Michael Jordan says he's the best defender that he ever faced, I'm going to go ahead and take Joey D. He was pretty good. Let me move over to my small forward. Number three on our list, most underrated NBA players. My small forward. Now, this guy gets blasted. His team didn't win enough. He shot too much. He didn't play defense. You might already trying to be putting that together a little bit. But people forget a couple things. They forget that, yeah, he wasn't a great defender, but you know what? You couldn't defend him. You couldn't defend him. And they also forget that he was going against some really, really good teams. Really good teams. Some teams that we kind of put up there, upper echelon all-time teams. And we also kind of forget that he didn't have a ton of help. In his career, 15 seasons, this guy averaged 25 points a game and 7 rebounds a game. And you know, he came into the league, when he first came into the league, back in the 80s, late 70s maybe, came into the league as more of a dunker. Oh, he's an athlete, he's a dunker, but he's not a shooter, he's not a scorer, he's just really, really athletic. No. Because he turned himself into a deadly, deadly shooter. And this guy was so good off the glass. I mean, he could bank it in from like the corner. He was so good off the glass. His shooting touch is so underrated. We never count this guy among great shooters. And I'm not talking necessarily long range game because the NBA at that time, we didn't gear the NBA teams like that around the 3-point shot like they do now. If a lot of those 80s players, you know, the Larry Birds and those guys had played in the era of now, I mean, you look at the number of shots they put up from outside the 3-point line. It's not even close to what these guys do now. They didn't use it as a weapon like that. They used it kind of as a last resort. This guy could shoot. His mid-range game was absolutely amazing, and he could score on anyone. So good off the glass. He was too quick for a four to guard him. He was too quick. He was too athletic. He was way too strong for a three guard to guard him. And he gets a lot of bad rap because he lost to the Celtics, one of the great Celtics teams. He lost to the Pistons that won those back-to-back championships. Didn't have a ton of help. I mean, Kevin Willis, Antoine Carr at the end of his career, Tree Rollins. Come on. Give me my small forward, Dominique Wilkins. We are going to score some points. We might not be able to stop you, but I've got Joe Dumars. I've got some other people coming. Dominique Wilkins can score. I'll guarantee you that. He'll get his 25 or 30 that night. I just have to hope that his opponent doesn't get his, you know, 28 or 45 or whatever. I can still remember. I can remember being a kid and watching, you know, they used to have, I think it was Tuesday nights on TNT and I would watch, and I can remember they would have, you know, Hawks versus Bulls and like Jordan would go for like 45 and Dominique would go for like 57. It's just amazing. Amazing. I know. I sound like one of those old guys. Get off my lawn. The 80s was so much better basketball. Pretty entertaining product, though. Pretty entertaining product. You had some good teams. It wasn't as watered down. There were less teams. I mean, there's only like, you know, 24 teams or 22 teams or 26 teams, something like that. But every team, it seemed like had three stars, like pretty good players on those teams. Loaded up teams. Let me move on to my power forward. Number two on my list here. Here's a guy who's 6'10" power forward and can jump out of the gym. Played 14 seasons, averaged 17 points a game and 8 rebounds a game. This guy shot 55% from the field. But here's what might be more impressive, especially in the day that we have today, where we have the DeAndre Jordans, we have the Dwight Howards. Here's a guy who shot 76% from the free throw line. You know, the lowest he ever shot was 52% in one season from the field. His mid-range game, he understood his limitations. Mid-range game and defense and toughness and rebounds and putbacks and do the dirty work that sometimes, you know, the prettier players don't want to do. And if not for a guy by the name of Michael Jordan hitting a shot, floating in the air and hitting a shot over Craig Elo, might have gone on to a little bit more wins in the playoffs, maybe gone on to the finals in the playoffs, could have definitely battled with the Pistons. But make my power forward a guy that is very underrated, no one talks about. Give me Larry Nance. Larry Nance was a tough dude. Do all that dirty work. Do all that cleanup work. And I know he's going to shoot a high percentage. He's not going to take bad shots. Oh, and by the way, he can hit his free throws. Yeah, pretty amazing thought, isn't it? In this day and age. Now, I'm going to go on to my center. I'm going to go on to my number one most underrated NBA player here. I'm going to go to my center. And when I say who it is, you're going to say, man, you're crazy. He's not underrated. He is not underrated. We talk about this guy. But let me ask you this. Because I think he might be one of the most underrated players of all time. Let me ask you this. Who is the greatest basketball player to ever play the game? Michael Jordan? Magic Johnson? We've got the, you know, the young crowd, LeBron James, maybe Kobe Bryant, maybe a Larry Bird or someone like that. Greatest player to ever play the game. Okay. Let me change the question. Who is the greatest center to ever play the game? No, Bill Russell. Wilt Chamberlain. Look at the numbers Chamberlain put up. Hakeem Olajuwon. Shaquille O'Neal. Just for sheer strength and physicality, Shaquille O'Neal has got to be on this. This guy doesn't get mentioned anymore. He used to, but he doesn't get mentioned anymore because we kind of forgot about him. Sports fans have short memories. And probably, to be honest, because he kind of looked like a dinosaur. And to be honest, he was kind of a jerk. Although when you think about what he grew up with, being a large black man growing up in the 60s and 70s, you kind of understand where he may have had a little bit of an edge to him. Because he went through a lot in his world. This guy went 79-2 in high school. Then he went on to college. Now he's from New York, went out to the other coast, won 3 national championships in college. And now remember, this is at a time when freshmen were not allowed to play. Was the most outstanding player on all 3 of those championship teams. Then he goes to the NBA. Well, that's going to be a little bit different at the NBA. You're going to have to play against some big dogs. Yeah, he won 6 titles. He won 6 MVPs, was 19 times an NBA All-Star, and 6 times on the NBA All-Defensive Team. He is still the NBA all-time scoring leader with over 38,000 points. And you absolutely could not defend his go-to move. No one would do it now, though. No one would make the move now because it's an uncool move. But Kareem Abdul-Jabbar would go to that skyhook and there's no defense for it. You can't block it. You can't stop it. The only thing you can do is not allow him to get the ball. That's the only thing you couldn't do. But see, Kareem didn't care. He didn't care how it looked. He would go get it. He would go one way, go the other way, put up the skyhook, and it was money. And he could hit it from range. He could hit it from just about anywhere. You could not stop Kareem Abdul-Jabbar. But does he get talked about anymore? Is he on those lists? Greatest player ever? Greatest center ever? No, we kind of forgot about Kareem. We kind of forgot about him. And to be fair, he's probably forgotten a lot of things too because he smokes a lot of weed. Let's be real honest. So maybe he's kind of forgot about it too. But Kareem Abdul-Jabbar is my number one most underrated NBA player. And my 5 right there, my underrated guys, we're going to be pretty tough. I don't know if we can beat everybody. We're going to be pretty tough. We're going to be pretty good when we have to be. Now, I told you that, you know, Kareem with that skyhook, you couldn't defend it, but he didn't care. He didn't care about how it looked because if kids today really, really wanted to be pretty close to being undefendable, they would learn the skyhook. But it's not cool. It's not cool to make that move, to throw the hook. What are you, a grandpa? No one would do that. And I've told you in the past, you know, I coached high school basketball, coached youth basketball for a number of years. And there are certain things that you learn when you're doing that. There are certain traits that you look for. And kids absolutely would never learn that skyhook because it just wouldn't be cool to do in today's game. It just wouldn't be that cool. But I want to talk about, we're going to do another quick Daily Dose top five here. I'm going to give you my Daily Dose top five prettiest shooters, because there are certain guys. And the reason I tell you, there are certain guys, when I walk into a gym, I can walk into a gym right now and I can look around the gym and you can be just a guy walking in and I can see you shoot maybe two or three times and I can tell you if you're a player. Maybe not if you're a little bit if you're a player. I can certainly tell if you're a shooter. But you know, when you think about some of the great shooters of all time, some of the great shooters, they're not always the prettiest shooters. I mean, think of a guy like Larry Bird. And Larry Bird, to me, is one of the greatest shooters ever. Bar none. Ever. But his form is kind of weird. It's kind of back over his head. It's a little bit off to the side. It is not how you would teach guys to shoot a basketball. He shot it so many times growing up as a kid that I mean, he was so deadly with it, but it's not exactly pretty. When you think of a guy like Reggie Miller is another guy that you look at and you say, well, his release is a little bit weird. The way he shoots it and gets rid of it, he brings that left hand over a little bit. His hands kind of split at the end. It's kind of a different shot. Deadly, one of the greatest shooters ever, but it's not a pretty shot. It's not necessarily like a textbook shot. I want to talk about some of these guys that did have the prettiest shots. Like we said, Kareem didn't care how he looked. These guys did, and they had some really, really pretty shots. Number five on my list of prettiest shooters. Played for a number of years. Shot 40% from three-point range, which is about the line. If you're at about 40% shooting threes, you're really, really good shooting threes. Set shooter. His feet were set. Peja Stojakovic was a guy that when you watch him shoot it, and you can, you know, go YouTube Peja and the way he shot, had to have his feet set. But when he got his feet around and were set, he had that nice shooting pocket, elbow straight in, extended up, and he's a big guy. Sometimes those big guys, when you get up to the 6'7", 6'8", 6'9", range, that's why I'm always impressed really with Kevin Durant, as big as he is. Sometimes those bigger guys, their limbs are longer. It's harder for them to have that pretty form. Peja was a guy, though, that had really, really pretty form. Good-looking shooter. Just his form, his feet, the way he released it. Peja Stojakovic, very, very pretty shooter. Number four. Now, Peja was a set shooter. He was a guy that had to come around, get his feet set. If he had his feet set, he was very, very deadly. This guy was a jump shooter. And this guy might be one of the most pure jump shooters that I have ever seen in my life. Could get his shot off almost anytime he wanted to. Another guy that was right around the 40% range, three-point land, scored 19,000 career points. And this is a guy that you wouldn't think of him as a featured player. You wouldn't think of him as one of the big-time scorers or the big-time But Dale Ellis was one of the prettiest shooters ever. You want to talk about a jump shooter. And jump shooting kind of changes the game a little bit when you're talking about shooting. It's one thing to catch the ball, stand, and shoot it. It's another thing to elevate over a defender and go up and shoot it. Changes your form a little bit, changes the way your footwork is a little bit. Do you go straight up? Do you come forward a little bit? Dale Ellis could get that shot off anytime he wanted to. And he was absolutely deadly with it. Go YouTube Dale Ellis putting up like 18 points in one quarter, and almost all of them are long-range jump shots. Number three on our list, very, very good shooter, very, very underrated point guard in general. But if I was looking to show kids how to shoot a free throw, this was the guy. See, a lot of people, we were taught as kids, sometimes we were kind of taught funny stuff when we were kids. When you're shooting, you were taught, okay, you want to, you know, keep the elbow in, and you've got that shooting pocket, and I go straight up, and when I do, I put my hand in the cookie jar, right? Right? That's what we were taught. Well, sort of. But here's the problem. If that basketball comes off of your ring finger and your pinky finger, that ball's going off to the side. So I really don't want to put my whole hand in the cookie jar like we were told as kids. I want to put my first two fingers, my pointer and my middle finger, I want to put those two fingers in the cookie jar. And if you want to see a guy that did that and did that well, go look at Mark Price. Mark Price shot for his career over 90% at the free throw line. And if you ever, there are pictures of him. We had a poster in one of our gyms of him. And you see him following through with those first two fingers, and only the first two fingers going into that cookie jar, as we were told as kids. His follow through was absolutely perfect. Pretty shooter, Mark Price. Could get it done from long range. Very, very good passing the ball. Very good finding the open man. But Mark Price was a deadly, deadly free throw shooter. And I have to think a lot of it was due to his just perfect follow through. Number two on my list of prettiest shooters. This is a guy, if you're just going to go teach kids, if you have a young kid, you have a youngster in your life, and you say, here is who you should shoot like. And I realize right now everyone's going to watch Steph Curry, and I understand it. I would too. The quick release that Curry has and that kind of thing. But if you want to shoot like a certain player, watch the way he moves without the basketball. Watch the way he catches the ball. Watch the way he uses his screens and he gets himself free. Watch the way he gets his feet and his body wrapped around the ball when he's getting ready to shoot it. You watch a guy that has scored over 24,000 points in the NBA. 40% from three-point range, 89% career-wise at the free throw line. You go watch Ray Allen. Ray Allen is absolutely one of the prettiest shooters to ever play the game, and he was deadly. People forget Ray Allen because we all remember Ray Allen when he was, with Miami, and he was kind of just that sniper. He would kind of lurk around on the perimeter. And if, someone happened to find a loose ball, swing it out to him, he was deadly with it. But you forget that younger in his career when he was like Milwaukee and playing with some of those other teams, he was going out and getting 25 a night. He was going out and getting 25, 26 a night. Ray Allen was deadly and one of the prettiest shooters ever. A guy that we actually did. We would show guys film of Ray Allen and say, this is what you're modeling your game after. That good of a shooter. Number one on my list of prettiest shooters. You might be trying to think, who else is out there? Who else is out there? There's a couple guys, like I said, there's guys like Jordan, good looking shooter, not an ugly shooter by any means. Someone like Larry Bird, a little unorthodox the way he shot. Reggie Miller, some of those guys, a little bit different. LeBron James, it's just not as pretty. It's just not, there's something about the smoothness and the flow of a good shooter. And when they get in rhythm, they can just stroke the basketball and just make it go in the net. The prettiest shooter of all time. He's number 15 in your program, but he's number one in your heart. From the Hickory Huskers, Jimmy Chitwood. Now, I've seen Jimmy Chitwood. I've seen the movie Hoosiers. I don't know how many times. I've seen him play. I've seen Jimmy Chitwood play a lot of basketball, and I've only seen that guy miss like three shots ever. Remember when he was out shooting at that little dirt hoop he had out, behind his house or whatever, and he was shooting with the flat basketball, and that was the first time you really saw him shoot? Dude's got a pretty shot. And remember, he's shooting and coach comes out, because he's not going to try out, and coach comes out and talks to him a little bit, and right at the end, and Jimmy hasn't missed. Bam, hitting, bam, hitting, 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 just stroking the basketball. And coach says, hey, Jimmy, I just want to let you know, I don't care if you play or not. And he walks away, and Jimmy clanks it. One of the only times he misses. I think he missed maybe two shots in the championship game against like Muncie Central. Three misses ever. Dude had one of the prettiest shots ever. I mean, remember in the big game, and he tells coach, coach draws up the play for the other guy. We're going to use Jimmy as a decoy. And Jimmy drops the coach. I'll make it. He was all LeBron James on us. Except that Jimmy, won the big game. But yeah, other than that, he went all LeBron James. The guy that actually played Jimmy Chitwood, his name was, I believe, Maris Valenas. This is a guy, an actor that they found for the part, and he did have that pretty jump shot that they really, really liked. He was actually cut all 3 years of his high school career. Never made a varsity basketball team in his career. Got cut every single year. went on to bigger and better, though, did pretty well as Jimmy Chitwood in the movie Hoosiers. Hey, before we get back to the throwback episode, just want to remind you, make sure you're stopping by dailydosports.com where we have new articles going up every week. We have links to the podcast. We have links to the video. We even have links to the Daily Dose gear. If you do need a t-shirt, a sweatshirt, or a hoodie, and you get to pick the color they come in, make sure you stop by dailydosports.com and you can find exactly what you need. Now, let's go back to this throwback episode of the Daily Dose. Now, as we do every single week, we have got to get to our Daily Dose top five. You know, the Daily Dose top five, you don't know which direction it's going to go. It may inform. It may entertain. It may just give you some insight into certain things in your life. And that is one of those cases today. Today on the Daily Dose top five, you know, Larry and I talked about it earlier. Talked about the Powerball. Powerball is up to $1.5 billion. Do you realize that your odds of winning, they're estimating, are about 1 in 292 million. Not great odds. I'm going to be honest. Not great odds. So today on the Daily Dose Top 5, I thought it might be a good idea to just give you a few events that are more likely to happen than you winning the Powerball. I'm not trying to rain on your parade. Understand that. I'm not trying to depress you and tell you there's no chance. In fact, what I'm trying to tell you is some of the items on the list today have a better chance of happening. And they're not all bad. I'm going to tell you that right up front. Some of the items on this list, they're not all bad. Some of them you're like, oh, I could live with that. So today, on our Daily Dose Top 5, events with better odds of happening than you winning the Powerball tonight. Number 5 on our list. Hey, this one's not going to hurt your feelings. Number 5, I told you, you have a 1 in 292 million chance of winning the Powerball tonight. Did you know that if you are currently living in the United States, I know we have some listeners in other countries, but if you are currently living in the United States of America, you have a 1 in 88,000 chance of dating an American supermodel. Hey, that's not all bad, right? An American supermodel? Really? I mean, that wouldn't wreck your day. So you've actually got a better chance. You could be like Derek Jeter, like Leonardo DiCaprio. I mean, you have that opportunity. I guess if you're a female, maybe it's a little different. I don't know how that works. But you've got a shot. You've got a shot. So that's number 5. Number 4 on our list, you know, 1 in 10 million people. 1 in 10 million people will become president of these United States. Now, you've got to be a U.S. citizen, and you've got to have some of those qualifications to get into that, you know, to that running. But 1 out of 10 million, you could be president of the United States. And I'm going to be honest with you. Based on our current candidates, my Daily Dose audience is way smarter than what we've got out there. So I'm okay with that. I would be okay with one of you becoming president of the United States. I've seen what else we have to offer. You're smarter than that. Number 3 on our list. Events with a better chance of happening than you winning the Powerball. Number 3. Okay, this one's not quite as fun, but there's actually a better chance that you're listening to this podcast while being on fire right now. There, 1 in 500,000 listening to the Daily Dose Sports Podcast while actually on fire right now. That's your odds. I would like to say, if you are one of those people listening to this while being on fire, thanks for tuning in. I realize you got a lot on your plate right now. I realize you got a lot of things going at home. Thanks for tuning in. I appreciate it. Share the podcast. Give it to a friend. Number 2 on our list of things with better odds than you winning the Powerball. Number 2, 1 in 7 million. Now, I believe that you've got to be like a high school basketball player. 1 in 7 million, you're going to get drafted into the NBA. 1 in 7 million versus 1 in 292 million? Are you kidding me? That's still better odds. That is still better odds. You could get drafted into the NBA. Imagine Adam Silver calling your name at the podium. You got a shot. You got a shot. Better shot than you do of winning tonight. The number 1 event on our list today. Better odds of happening than you winning the Powerball jackpot, which is $1.5 billion. You have a 1 in 292 million chance of winning it. The Cincinnati Bengals actually win a playoff game. 1 in 291 million shot. So you're telling me there's a chance. As we do every single week, we have got to get to our Daily Dose Top 5. You know, a lot of talk, of course, about Stephen Curry, about Klay Thompson. Is that the best backcourt duo ever? It's possible. It's possible. Now, here's the problem for me. They haven't done it long enough. You've basically done it for two, maybe three seasons. I've got to see a little bit more from you before I can put you in there. But I'll be honest. When you look at the scoring punch that they have, scoring-wise, I can put them probably up there against anybody. Are they the best backcourt duo? This week on the Daily Dose, we count down the best backcourt duos. Now, I didn't go all stats on this. Sometimes I'll dig out some stats, and I got a few, but I didn't go all stats on these guys. I went with who would I want to see? And I'll be honest. Klay and Steph are must-see TV for me. You might like them. You might hate them. You might be a fan of the Warriors. You might not be able to stand the Warriors. I know people on both sides. They are entertaining to me. They are fascinating to watch. And so this week, I picked my Daily Dose top five best backcourt duos. And Steph and Klay might end up being number one. But not yet. Not yet. Because right now, I have a full slate of what these guys did. I got to see how Steph and Klay end up. What if they get beat by the Cavaliers and they only win one? They're okay. Maybe they're top five. They're not top of the mountain though. Let's look at the top five best backcourt duos. Number five. Now this is a little bit before my time. I had to go out and dig up some film. I had to go look at some of these guys. One of the guys I had studied a little bit, but I got to go with the Lakers. Back in the late '60s and early '70s, Gail Goodrich and Jerry West. I mean, they won the title once. But these guys could score. Now, they played together from 65 to 68. And then Goodrich went to Phoenix for a little while, and he came back, and they played again for another 4 years, 70 to 74. They won the title, I believe it was in 71, 72, right around then. But here's the number to just throw out there. Goodrich and West averaged, not did it once, did it twice, averaged 52 points per game combined. In 71-72. That's pretty good. That's pretty good. Yeah, except for that they did it without a three-point line. There were no three-pointers. 52 points a game, 26 points apiece, with no threes. What would they be shooting today? They'd be averaging like 70 today. And you know, they were both jump shooters. It wasn't like, hey, this guy's a slasher, this guy goes to the basket, this guy finishes around the rim. No, they're jump shooters. That's amazing shooting. You want scoring? Gail Goodrich and Jerry West, the logo, would give you some major, major scoring. I'll take them. Number four on my list, best backcourts. And like I said, this isn't statistical. This is who I want to see. This is me. This is what I want to see. I got to go with the Philadelphia 76ers back in the late 70s and early 80s. Maurice Cheeks and Andrew Toney. They won the title in 83. Cheeks was the steady passer, very good defender, always found the right guy to get the ball to. And Andrew Toney was an assassin. They called him the Boston Strangler. In 1981, the 76ers were up 3-1 on Boston on the Eastern Conference Final. Does that sound familiar at all? Up 3-1? Boston stopped Andrew Toney and came back to win the series. So the next season, they were up 3-1 again. And this time, they said, okay, all we got to do is stop Toney and we're going to beat him again. Except Toney wouldn't let them stop him. He scored 34 and knocked out Boston and got the nickname the Boston Strangler. You can go back. You can go to YouTube. You can pull up some of Andrew Toney's games. And Maurice Cheeks, like I said, he was steady, got the ball to the right guy, good defensively, very, very smart, knocked down the shot when he needed to. Andrew Toney could just fill it up. Long range, could hit it. Mid range, could beat you and just had a pretty jumper. Andrew Toney was just nasty. Ended up, having some foot problems that limited him just to 8 years in the league. But that duo of Maurice Cheeks and Andrew Toney, that was as nasty as you could find. They did win a title. Number three on my list, best backcourt duos. I got to go with the Detroit Pistons, Isaiah Thomas and Joe Dumars. They won two championships there at the late 80s. And the thing about Isaiah and Joe Dumars, they could do it at both ends of the floor. Hey, Isaiah could put up 25 a night anytime he wanted to. I think he's a very, very underrated player. We kind of forget how good Isaiah was. Like, we remember the stuff he had with Jordan at the end. Isaiah could go out and just drop 40 on you in a night. He was so explosive. He's only 6 foot. He wasn't a big guy. He might not have been that tall. I know they listed him at 6'1". I also know they lied. I met Isaiah once. He wasn't 6'1". But, you know, it wasn't just Isaiah. No one gave Michael Jordan the problems like the Pistons did, and no one played him better than Joe Dumars did. And Mike even said that himself. He said, Joe Dumars gave me more problems than anyone I ever faced. The Isaiah Thomas, Joe Dumars backcourt, they were tough. They were physical. They could score on you. They could shut you down. They might have been a little bit dirty. These two were nasty. But if you wanted to win a game, yeah, you could do worse than picking Isaiah Thomas and Joe Dumars. That was a nasty, nasty backcourt. I'd go with them. Number two on my list. Man, do I got to go with another Laker combo here? I feel bad picking. I know we have a lot of listeners out in California, but man, another Lakers. I got to go with Magic Johnson, and I'm going to go with Byron Scott. I could go Michael Cooper. But, you know, Byron's skills just meshed really, really well with Magic because he could run the floor well. He could shoot it from outside. He could slash. He could defend. He could do a lot of different things, and Magic could always find him. Not that, you know, Cooper wasn't a great player as well, but, I mean, when you think about it, this combo won three titles, and when they won these three, Kareem was kind of starting to get older. It wasn't like it was just dump the ball into Kareem and let him go to work every possession. He was starting to get a little bit older. Showtime at its finest was Magic Johnson running the floor, James Worthy on one side, Byron Scott on the other, and you did not know where that ball was going to go. For my number two backcourt of all time, I'll go with Magic Johnson and Byron Scott. And to be honest, I could probably put just about anybody in there with Magic Johnson because whoever was there was going to be pretty good. But Byron Scott was a very, very nice fit for that. That is my number two. My number one best backcourt duo. Who could it be? Number of different great guards, obviously, that are out there. Number of guards, if we go back older, you know, go back to Oscar Robertson and some of those guys. Who could my number one backcourt duo of all time be? Well, I got to go with results. I got to go with results. So I'm going to go with the Chicago Bulls, Michael Jordan, and whoever else they put out there with him. I don't care. You want John Paxson? All right. B.J. Armstrong? Yeah, okay. Ron Harper? Sure. How about Steve Kerr? Yeah, just put someone out there with Mike, and you're going to be fine because he's probably the best basketball player to ever play the game. Paxson and Kerr were a great complement because they could find spots, find seams, and they could knock down that open shot. Don't underestimate how good they were at knocking down. They didn't get many. They didn't get many. When they got them, they had to knock them down or Mike wasn't going to give them the ball again. B.J. Armstrong, pretty good playmaker, pretty good passer, very, very solid player in the years. And then Ron Harper, people forget how good Ron Harper was back before all the knee injuries. When he was Cleveland, he was the man in Cleveland, and he could light up the scoreboard. I'd probably go with Harper as being probably the best backcourt mate because by the time he came to Chicago, the knees had kind of gotten away from him. He was a very good defender. He was a very smart player, and he's a very, very tough guy. But this backcourt duo, Michael Jordan and whoever, six titles. And don't forget one important item. They could have had eight if Mike hadn't gone and, you know, messed around with baseball. Now, as we do every single week, we have got to get over to our Daily Dose Top 5. Hey, we all know what's coming in the NBA, right? The NBA Finals are going to be the Golden State Warriors versus the Cleveland Cavaliers, aren't they? I mean, they're the two heavy favorites. They've been the favorite since last spring. That's how long. They're the most talented teams. They're the past two defending champions, and they have met for the past two NBA Finals. Looks like it's going to be a third time. It's never happened before. We've never seen the same two teams meet three times in a row. But it looks like it's going to happen this time, doesn't it? But you know, there have been teams in the past that we thought were just an absolute lock to go to the NBA Finals. They went all the way through. They got to the conference final and then they got upset. You know, matchups are everything in basketball. And if a matchup doesn't go the way that we think it will, or if we underestimate a certain aspect of the matchup, things could go sideways. So today, on the Daily Dose, we count down the Daily Dose top five NBA Conference Finals upsets. Could we see it happen again? I don't think it's going to happen. It's going to be the Warriors and the Cavs, right? Right? Maybe. Number five on our list. We go back to 2009. You know, the Cleveland Cavaliers at that time had LeBron James, and they were the top seed in the NBA East. They had a 66-16 record. Of course, the Orlando Magic, they were 59-23. They were the four seed, and remember, they had Dwight Howard. They had Rashard Lewis. They had Hedo Turkoglu. Yes, Hedo Turkoglu. But the Magic out-muscled the Cavaliers. They out-rebounded them, and they pounded the ball inside. Hey, LeBron put up huge numbers in this series. LeBron James averaged almost 39 points per game. But Dwight Howard scored 22 points a game. He also had 13 rebounds a game, and the Magic held Cleveland to just 32% from outside the three-point arc. And in the deciding game, it was Dwight Howard who stepped up. It was Dwight Howard who had 40 points and 14 rebounds, and the Orlando Magic knocked off the Cleveland Cavaliers and went to the NBA Finals, not the Cavs. Everybody thought it would be the Cavaliers. Nope. Orlando got by them. They went instead. That's number five on our list. Number four, we got to go all the way back to 1971. You know, the 52-30 New York Knicks were actually just coming off of winning the NBA championship the previous season back in 1970. In 71, they had rolled by the Atlanta Hawks in five games, and all they had to do, just beat the Washington Bullets. The Washington Bullets were just a little above 500, and if they did that, the Knicks would be headed back to the NBA Finals. But this was a tight series, and it went all the way to a seventh game. And you know, three of the games in the series decided by less than 5 points. That's one thing you gotta do. If you're gonna pull the upset, you gotta find a way to win those close games. Earl Monroe, Jack Marin, and Fred Carter combined for 62 points a game for the Bullets. Wes Unseld was a monster inside, and Washington found a way to get a tough 2-point win in Game 7. Of course, the Knicks would go on to get another ring just 2 years later, but they didn't get it in 1971 when the Bullets knocked them off. Number three on our list, if you've ever wondered why Greg Popovich, coach of the San Antonio Spurs, coaches the regular season the way he does, and a lot of it has to do with our number three entry on our list. Because in 2001, the San Antonio Spurs were dominating in the regular season. They had a 58-24 record. The Los Angeles Lakers, on the other hand, they weren't pushing to be in first place. They were just kind of content to cruise along. They didn't particularly care about their record. Now, back then, unlike now, Phil Jackson still had some brain cells.
Well, you know, that's just like your opinion, man.
He knew the regular season didn't really matter all that much. And when they met in the NBA West Conference Finals, the Lakers didn't just beat San Antonio. They swept San Antonio behind Kobe Bryant's 33 points a game and Shaquille O'Neal's 27 points and 13 rebounds per game. The Lakers beat the Spurs by an average of 20 points per game in that sweep. And since then, we've all seen Greg Popovich learned a really, really important lesson. But Lakers over the Spurs comes in at number three. Number two on our list. Go back to 1986. Back to the Los Angeles Lakers. The Lakers were 62-20. They were the top seed in the West. They crushed the Spurs. They beat the Mavericks. And now they were about to do the same thing to the young Houston Rockets. This is the Showtime Lakers. This was Magic. This was Kareem. This was Worthy. This was Byron Scott. This was Michael Cooper. You know what they're going to do to those young Houston Rockets with their silly twin towers? We would be witnessing another Lakers versus Celtics NBA Finals, except that's not exactly how that went down. Because that young twin towers group made Kareem Abdul-Jabbar look kind of old. Hakeem Olajuwon and Ralph Sampson combined for nearly 60 points a game. And the Rockets were also getting contributions from Lewis Lloyd and Robert Reed. Yes, the Rockets got handled by the Celtics in the finals. And yes, the Lakers would go on to win the next two titles after this. But in 1986, they got beaten just 5 games by the Houston Rockets. And it helped Los Angeles because they looked and said, what do we got to do? We've got to go get some younger guys. We've got to go get some size. We're going to have to learn how to deal with these Twin Towers. Because Olajuwon and Sampson made them look bad back in 86. They made some adjustments. They fixed some things. And they went out and got it better in 87 and 88. That comes in at number two. Number one on our list of top five NBA conference finals upsets. Got to go back a ways for this one. Got to go clear back to 1976. The Golden State Warriors were 59-23. You might remember a couple of the names on that team. Rick Barry, Phil Smith, Jamal Wilkes. They were scoring 110 points a game. And they beat Bob Lanier and the Detroit Pistons in the first round of the NBA playoffs. Beat them in six. Now, instead of facing the number two seed, Seattle Supersonics, somehow, the 42-40 Phoenix Suns got by them. The Suns didn't even look like they belonged in the NBA conference finals. And in game one, that's certainly how it looked. The Suns got blown out by 25. The Warriors were going to blow past the Suns. This wouldn't even be close. This wouldn't even be a competitive series. But remember, winning at home in a 7-game series, that's just what you're supposed to do. Remember, you don't get any bonus points for winning a home game. That's what you should do. And in game two, the Suns got 31 points from Paul Westphal. They stole the win in Oakland. Golden State got home court advantage back when they won game three. The Suns got game four. But when the Warriors got game five, looked like it might be over. Because now you've got two games to win one. Somehow, the Suns won game six and forced a game seven. But it's on the road. It's at Golden State. The Warriors, yes, it kind of got tight and they took them clear to a seventh game. But the Warriors are going to survive this, wouldn't they? No. Because in game seven, the Phoenix Suns held the Golden State Warriors to just 86 points and advanced to the NBA Finals. Hey, we know this year who the favorites are. We know it should be Warriors, it should be Cavaliers. And we kind of feel like we just need to fast forward to those finals, get the show on the road, let's move past everybody. Yes, we know the other teams that are out there, but we know who it's going to be. We know this is going to end up being Spurs and Cavs. But don't forget, there have been heavy favorites go into the NBA Conference Finals before, and they ended up going home. Now, as we do every single week, okay, maybe not every single week during the summer, but most weeks, we have to get to our Daily Dose top five. You know, it seems like every year, we have some big name free agents moving around in the NBA, doesn't it? This year, of course, we see Paul George shifting and going over to Oklahoma City. He's been in Indiana for his whole career. We see Gordon Hayward uproots and moves back to Boston. He's going to play for his former coach in college. But I'm not sure any of the guys that have moved around this year are going to be considered all that big as far as the history of the game goes. Because the guys on our list, these are some of the biggest names you've ever heard moving around in free agency. These are guys that moved, and when they moved, they completely changed the look of not only the team, but sometimes even the league when they change teams. Here is our Daily Dose top five most impactful NBA free agent moves of all time. Number five on our list.
Five.
Got to go back to 1977. You know, the Los Angeles Lakers had won the title back in 1972 with Wilt Chamberlain and Elgin Baylor and Jerry West. But in 1975, that group was pretty much gone. And the Lakers had made a trade for Kareem Abdul-Jabbar. Immediately, the Lakers were a threat to win it all. In 77, they made a move to help Jabbar out and bring the title back to LA. He had had three really good seasons with the Golden State Warriors, and in 1977, the Los Angeles Lakers managed to sign Jamal Wilkes. And Jamal Wilkes had defense and he had scoring. And the combination completely changed the look of the team because no longer could you just put all of your attention on stopping Kareem Abdul-Jabbar. Or just say, okay, Kareem, you might score a ton, but you're going to have to do it by yourself because there's no one else on the floor that can hurt us. Not with Jamal Wilkes on the floor. His defense and his scoring just completely changed how the Lakers could play. And pretty soon, of course, they got Magic Johnson. They got James Worthy. And the Lakers won three titles from 79 to 85 with Jamal Wilkes on that team. Pretty impactful signing. going and getting Jamal Wilkes completely changed the look of the Lakers back in the late 70s and early 80s. Number four on our list. We know we have a super team now. This was a super team years ago. See, the Philadelphia 76ers were already good. They had gone to the NBA Finals in 1980 and again in 1982 with Julius Erving and Daryl Dawkins. But they had lost both of those finals matchups. So following the 82 season, the Philadelphia 76ers gave Moses Malone a six-year deal, and the Houston Rockets couldn't match the deal. So Malone joined the Sixers, and that 1983 team has got to be considered one of the all-time great teams in history. And I know they weren't sustained for a long period of time, but that 1983 Philadelphia 76er team was very 85 Chicago Bearish, because for one season, they were absolutely dominant. Think of some of the players on that team. Maurice Cheeks, distributing the ball, playing defense. Andrew Toney, the Boston Strangler, the shooting, the scoring that Andrew Toney brought. Julius Erving in all the different ways, and I realize he was older by this time, but all the different ways that Julius Erving could hurt you. Bobby Jones and the style of defense that he played. Moses Malone could do it all. That 83 Sixers team was loaded. In the postseason, they lost just one game in the entire postseason. They swept through the NBA Finals. No, Moses Malone going to Philadelphia in 1982, definitely one of the most impactful moves ever. Moving on to number three. You know, the Los Angeles Lakers were in a little bit of a drought, at least for them, because the Lakers hadn't won a championship since 1988. And honestly, in 1996, it seemed like they had kind of been treading water. Yeah, they made it to the finals when Michael beat Magic in 91. That was as close as they got. They'd make the playoffs.
Playoffs?
But they weren't doing much when they got to those playoffs. But in 1996, Jerry West, of course, was the guy that landed a couple of big fish to turn the Lakers around and make them championship contenders again. First, he traded Vlade Divac to Charlotte to select some high school kid named Kobe Bryant. Yeah, and then he convinced Shaquille O'Neal to leave Orlando and go to La La Land. Hey, it only lasted 8 years, and it might actually be remembered more for how it all broke up. But during the time that Shaq and Kobe did play together, they won three titles. That's not all bad. But when Shaquille O'Neal went from Orlando to Los Angeles, not only did he change the way the Lakers looked, he changed the way the entire NBA looked. That's impactful. Moving on to number two. And of course, we all remember this one, because it was just last spring that Kevin Durant not only left Oklahoma City, but he went to the rival team that had just knocked the Thunder out of the playoffs. And honestly, we always say it's about the money, it's about the money, it's about the money. And when they say it's not about the money, it's about the money. But honestly, I don't know if it was really about the money, because he could have made more money if he had stayed with the Thunder. But Kevin Durant wanted to win a championship, and he wanted to play with players like the Golden State Warriors have. He went to Golden State. The Warriors were dominant, and they plowed through the NBA postseason. The Warriors are now a super team, thanks to Kevin Durant, and they completely changed the way the NBA looked. That is number two on our list. Moving on to our final entry on our Daily Dose top five most impactful NBA free agent moves of all time. And this one's kind of three parts, really. Because first, in 2010, there was the decision. LeBron James announced in the summer of 2010 that he would be taking his talents to South Beach to join Chris Bosh and Dwayne Wade and form a super team. And they would win not one, not two, not three. Well, you can hear it for yourself.
But we also know you three kings came down here to win championships. Not one, championships.
Not two.
LeBron, tell us about that.
Not two, not three, not four, not five, not six, not seven.
Hey, the Miami Heat went to the NBA Finals four times. And actually, you know, not one, not two. They actually won just two titles. Then, in 2014, LeBron James went back to Cleveland. and delivered a championship to Cleveland, something that honestly we didn't think was even scientifically possible. He did it. You have to give LeBron a ton of credit. He brought a championship to Cleveland after returning in 2014. So how is this three-part? Oh yeah, because in 2018, LeBron James announced he was leaving again because he can't stand Cavs owner Dan Gilbert. Okay, it hasn't happened yet, but I think we all know it's about to. And when he does, just like it did in 2010, just like it did in 2014, in 2018, if LeBron James does move, it is going to make whatever team he goes to and the league look pretty different. Hey, next week on The Dose, we will get back to our regular format and we will be catching you up on all that is going on in the world of sports, a number of things that we have missed that we want to talk about. So make sure you stop by The Dose and be sure you let a friend know to do the same. Hey, I want to say thank you to each and every one of you for listening to The Daily Dose every week. Thank you for the emails. Thank you for the texts. Thank you for the tweets. Thank you for going over to DailyDoseSports.com and checking out the new things going up there every week. But more than anything, thank you for sharing the show, for sharing the videos, for sharing the articles with someone that you know. We absolutely love it when you do that. Have to say thank you to JSP. Could not do any of this without you. I will see you all next Wednesday. Have a great week, everybody.